All right, welcome to the Free Stretch Podcast. Here on JoeBucksFan.com, I am Bobby Fenton, and it is our first ever game day edition of the Free Stretch Podcast, as we've got a game, Thursday Night Football, the Bucks and the Patriots, our only game day edition this year, as the Bucks will play on Thursday Night Football, as every team does, against the Patriots, and what is being touted, depending on who you listen to, as perhaps one of the biggest regular season games in Buccaneer history. I think that is bunk, by the way. We'll talk about that later in the show. But it's always a big game when you're under the lights and everybody's watching, and I am super excited for the whole thing. And whenever we have games like this, you know, since we're off and running here, I think back to my childhood and how big of a deal it was back then, because the Bucks never got games like this. And depending on how old you are and how long you've been a Bucks fan, maybe you remember back to the 90s. The 90s were like the seminal time of my Bucks fandom, if you will. Growing up as a kid, I was born in 1980. I have memories from the late 80s, but the 90s was really when it, you know, really started to become buried deep in me. And, you know, the Bucks were always terrible through that entire time in my childhood. So they were never on Monday Night Football. Never saw them in a Monday Night Football game at the old Sombrero, as a matter of fact. But you know how they had, it used to be back then, they would split the season for Sunday Night Football, and there was no Thursday Night Football back then, but you had like TNT Sunday Nitro. Does anybody remember TNT Sunday Nitro? And that was like the first half of the year. Then it would go on ESPN the second half of the year for the Sunday night game. And every once in a while, the Bucks would be in one of those games. And I mean, like, when the schedule came out in the spring, like a little 10, 11, 12-year-old Bobby would, like, rush to the newspaper. And this is in April of any random year in the early to mid-90s. You can pick it. I'd always go get the Tampa Tribune, grab it. Oh, man, where's the schedule? What, do we have any night games? Oh, man, we're on Sunday night against the Lions in October. Oh, man, I mean, I would get so excited for it. And I have, I mean, I remember very clearly, I remember them playing the Lions in a Sunday night game at the Sombrero and going with my dad, even though it was a school night, we went anyway, and it was like the most fun I've ever had in my life. You know how big of a deal it is when you're not supposed to be doing something and your folks let you do it anyway, and you feel like, I mean, again, it's the greatest feeling ever. So it was some back and forth game, and I could look it up. If you look it up, my memory's good on this stuff, okay? You'll see what I'm telling you is true. Lead change went back and forth. I remember Gary Anderson. Remember Gary Anderson, the Bucks running back, number 40? He played for the Bandits for a little while, too. I remember him, like, having some touchdown run on, like, a toss sweep or something where he got to the pylon and, like, hurtled into the end zone, got flipped over. It was intense, and the Bucks won that game. I remember a Sunday night game. Also, and I'm sure some, if you're a Bucks fan that's been around a while, remembers the 90s at all, remember they played the Rams one Sunday night, and it wasn't even on TV here, even though it was primetime because of that stupid blackout rule. It was not televised on ESPN, but I remember listening to it on the radio, and again, a school night, and I'm sitting in my living room with the radio, and it was the Bucks-Rams, and the Bucks took a 27-3 lead, and they were just going off. It was great. And the Rams came back and won 31-27. And as a kid, remember there was no worse feeling as a kid? Like, I was a procrastinator. I don't know how many of you are like that, but I was always, and I still am, a procrastinator. And I would leave my homework to the very last minute. Sometimes I'd even do it, like, in the morning before going to school. Sometimes I'd even do it in one class if the homework was due in a class later in the day. Like, if you're in fourth period and the homework's due sixth period, I'd be banging out some of the homework from the sixth period class in the fourth period. That's the kind of person I am. That's just my nature. And it's not a good thing. I'm not trying to brag about it, but it's my nature. So anyway, thinking back to that Rams game, I remember I'd put my homework off, and I was planning on doing it after the Bucks. I don't know why I thought I would actually do this. And then the Bucks lost. I mean, just the double whammy. Like, the Bucks blow a huge lead, 27-3. Imagine being 12 years old when all this stuff means a little too much to you. You know, you get older and you kind of get a little more perspective. But when you're 12, like, the world revolved around whether or not the Bucks won or lost that week, which usually they had lost. But, like, the Bucks blow a 24-point lead on Sunday Night Football. They get beat. It's like 11:30 at night. I'm like 12 or 13. I have to look up what year it was. And I've got homework to do. Like, just a crushing feeling. Like, it's amazing the things you remember. I'm 37 now, and I actually remember that specific Sunday night just because of how bad I felt that I had homework after the Bucks blew a 24-point lead on Sunday Night Football. But the point of all this tangent to open this podcast is these night games are a big deal. Oh, there's one more. I got to tell you this one more. Just trust me. You'll like this one. So after the Bucks had been terrible for all those years, you guys remember 1997, they got good. They went 10-6, made the playoffs for the first time, all that stuff. And they hadn't played on Monday night that year, but the next year, 98, opening up Raymond James Stadium, they finally got a little love. They put them on Monday Night Football. It was a December game against the Packers at Raymond James Stadium. And you can imagine how the excitement level. And at this point, I was a freshman in college. And even though I went to the University of Florida, my freshman year I went to USF. Probably goes back to that procrastination thing I just mentioned and how, you know, maybe I could have done a little better in school. So my mom made me stay home at USF for freshman year. Said, you can't go to, you know, anywhere else yet unless you do well freshman year. So I did okay freshman year. But I had this one class, and it was calculus, I believe it was. And it was first semester of college. This is fall semester of 98. I graduated high school in the spring of 98. And it was the night class. I took a class from like 6 to, I think it was 6 to 8 p.m. every Monday night. And the Packers-Bucks Monday night game was on a Monday night in the first week of December, which coincided with the final exam for this calculus class. Now, I don't know how many of you did this in school, but this is another thing I used to do in high school and college. Because again, if you know me, you know I'm really good at just getting by. I would take, you know, you could figure out your grades and the teachers would give you the formula, like this test is 10%, final exam's 25%. So you could calculate exactly what you needed on the final exam to change your letter grade. In college, the letter grade's all that matters, you know. You either got an A, a B, a C. They might have had pluses and minuses, I can't remember. So I had figured out exactly what I needed on this calculus exam. Where, you know how you could say, okay, if I get a 40 or better, I've clinched a C. But if I want to get a B, I can get an 80 or better and get a B. So that, you know, that type of thing. So I forget what the exact number I needed to get a B, but I'd pretty much clinched a C. Like, I could tank the exam and still get a C. But if I applied myself and studied and took my time and thought out every problem, I could probably get a B in this class. So the final exam was on the night of the Monday Night Football game. So how important do you think getting a B as opposed to a C was to me at this point in my life when the Buccaneers had the first Monday Night Football game of my lifetime going on a few miles down the road? And I was a season ticket holder in 1998 as well. As a college freshman, I saved my job money. It was only a couple hundred bucks back then, unlike now. But I was a season ticket holder. So I go into the exam, ever the optimist, I'm thinking, you know what? Let me try and crank out this 80 real quick, knock this thing out, get my B. Maybe I can get out of here by 7:15, and I'll be there in time for the game. You know, the game was an 8:30 kickoff or whatever it was. So I show up to the exam at 6 p.m. I'm decked out in my Bucks gear. I'm going straight to the game from this exam. Like, it's already planned out. And I'm still thinking, hey, you know, we can maybe get a B here. This is going to be okay. So it's almost like a baseball team who, like, doesn't do anything at the trade deadline because they think they're still okay, but then they should have been sellers all along. So I get to the exam. I start into a few problems. I get a couple right. I get a couple wrong. I start just kind of, you know, I'm not thinking about anything but the game. My mind's completely somewhere else. And finally, I say, you know what? This is dumb. Like, I'm not getting this 80. And I just completely just said, you know what? Screw it. I think I filled in just random answers. I didn't even do actual problems the rest of the exam. Got out of there like a half hour before anybody else finished the exam, took my C, and got the hell to Raymond James Stadium, where the Bucks sacked Brett Favre like 17 times, forced fumbles, won the game. It was a great night. Again, a great memory. These nights are fun. And I don't know how many of you are going to the game, how many of you are having people coming over to your house. Maybe you're watching it alone, whatever. But these games are a reason, you know, one, not just to watch the game and be excited about it, but two, it's a weekday, maybe you got work tomorrow, but tomorrow's not going to feel like a regular work day. Tomorrow's going to go by faster. By after lunchtime, if you have a regular office job, the second half of the day will be a complete write-off. Maybe you'll dip out a little early. You know, whatever it is everybody's got going on in their lives, these games kind of feel more of an event than your typical Sunday at 1 p.m. game. So, it really is a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it. Now, Tom Jones wrote a column in the Tampa Bay Times this week about how this is the biggest regular season Bucks game in team history, and that's absurd. I mean, it might be up there as far as most anticipated, which the simple fact that the way the NFL schedule formula works, AFC teams only come here every 8 years, and we had the Patriots game 8 years ago be a London game, so Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have not played here and coached here ever. They haven't done that. The last time they would have been in Tampa was still in the Bledsoe era and before Belichick, and then they were due in 2009, which again ended up being a London game, which the Patriots won, I think, 35-7 or something like that. So that's a big deal, and I do remember seeing Brady, I think, in a preseason game, if my memory serves, which isn't the same, obviously, but that's a big deal, and the game sold out, everybody's very excited and all that stuff, and of course, I mean, I'm excited too. I just did a whole segment on why these games are special, but thinking back to 97, again, remember the Bucks-Packers 97 game? When we thought we were going to, after all those years of futility, hey, we're going to win the Central. We're going to the Bowl. And the Bucks had gone to Green Bay and gotten beat earlier that year, but they were coming back to Tampa. And it ended up being like 30,000 Packers fans to go with the Bucks fans, but I remember just a zoo-like atmosphere around the Sombrero for that one. I remember thinking about that game all week. I remember Rydell Anthony dropping a wide-open touchdown pass on a post route from Trent Dilfer. I remember the Bucks losing the game in a close one. I think it was 13-7 or something like that. And the Packers going on to win the division and win the Super Bowl, although the Bucks, of course, did make the playoffs. Anyway, point is, that was a bigger one. I think the opener back in 1997, when everybody really got that feeling that this was finally going to be the year. Not like all the other times we had said this is the year. 97, I remember that offseason, this is the year. And we had San Francisco coming in, Steve Young, Jerry Rice, all that stuff. They gave out those, you know, feel the power towels. Remember that was the whole thing in the late 90s, feel the power. That one was more anticipated than this one, I believe. And again, this one's big, but it's week four. And it's not a conference game or anything like that. If the Bucks lose, it's not the end of the world. Again, there's a hype factor to it being Thursday night, but I don't believe it measures up. I don't believe we'll be talking about this game in 20 years the way I'm talking about the Packers game and the 49ers game from 97. And there are others, too. I'm not just saying those are the only ones. I mean, the Bucks-Rams Monday nighter in 2000, that's the Warwick Dunn lateral to Sean King game. I remember that one just being, and that was a great game itself, but even the hype and the lead-up to that one was huge. You could go through the year. It doesn't even matter. You know, who cares how big it compares to other ones? It's a big one, and it's an excuse to get excited. And with me, it's always about friends, family, relationships. So tomorrow night, and I'm recording this Wednesday night, that's why I said tomorrow night. I'm not going to stop and restart, but you know what I mean. Tonight, tomorrow night, whatever it is. The thing is being released here on Thursday, so it's tonight, technically. If you're sitting there and just planning on going home and watching the game alone, and maybe you got some buddies who might be doing the same thing, pick up the phone, give them a phone call. Let this be an excuse to see your friends. I know being 37 with two kids now, I still see my friends, but I don't see them nearly as much as we used to. And sometimes I'll just get a jolt like, hey, why shouldn't I call them right now? And why shouldn't we do this together? Why should I sit here in my house on my own couch alone while they're sitting 3 miles away at their house on their couch? Why should we do that? Why don't we all use the same house and the same couch? Get a pizza. Get a 12-pack. If you're right now not planning on doing that, but you have people you could do that with, here's me trying to do a little public service announcement. Call your buddies up. Or you know what? Say, honey, let's call up a sitter. Let's try and just go down to the parking lot before the game and just see if we can find some tickets. Do it. Why not? It'll be fun. And if not, go back home. I'm going to try and do something for the game tomorrow. I'm still thinking about heading down there if I can get the kids to bed in time. But again, the kids complicate stuff. But if not, I'm not just going to sit here alone. We're going to make a big deal out of this. It'd be fun. So anyway, As far as the actual football goes, and we've talked about the hype and talked about all the fun we're going to have, there is some not-so-great news. Quan Alexander is out, as you may have found out on Joe Bucks Fan yesterday. Lavonte David, TJ Ward, Keith Tandy, all doubtful. Justin Evans is going to factor. There's a good chance for him to step up and be heard for the first time. Now, there's good news, too. Doug Martin, it's like a guy coming back from injury because he's back from suspension. Bucks running game sorely needs that bounce in the step we talked about in the preseason. And then you've got a New England team coming in off a loss. I don't love that. We're in a weird time with New England right now. It felt like we were down this road before a few years ago. Remember when the Chiefs blew them out at Arrowhead? I think that was Monday Night Football, too. And everybody wrote the Chiefs off, and I don't think they lost again the rest of the year and went to the Super Bowl. Or they might have lost once or twice more. This feels different this time, though. Because it's not like Tom Brady's not playing well because he's old, which it'd be one thing. The offense is actually doing okay for the Patriots. Their defense is a mess. On Joe Bucks Fan was reading about Mike Lombardi, who's a Belichick guy. You know, what's part of the inner circle? Talking about it's a complete disconnect, the likes of which I've never seen with the Patriots' defense. And Joe had a post about the whole thing, watching the film, and you saw the Panthers game. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But if you did, or if you saw the score, you saw the 33 points up there by Carolina, which is not an anomaly for the Patriots. They've given up more than 30 points more times in the past few games than they have in the past decade, it feels like. I have to look up the official numbers. And their secondary, their front seven, the whole defense really has issues all over the place. We've got terms like, and this is one of my favorite new terms. I'd never heard this term before, but Lombardi. Free access touchdowns. And it's true. I mean, those receivers just running wide open. Now, we were all burned, or not we were all, but those of us who said, hey, maybe the Patriots don't have it anymore a few years ago after that Kansas City game, looked silly a few months later. No one's really questioned the Patriots since. I've always felt like this can't last forever. I mean, the Patriots eventually are just going to be an average team, right? But as long as they have Brady and Belichick, it doesn't feel like now's the time. And yet, maybe some of us are tempted to buy into that notion again now. And maybe a good percentage of the people that are tempted to buy into that notion don't want to say it out loud or don't want to fully commit to it because, hey, it's still the Patriots, it's still Brady, it's still Belichick. And until proven, not until hinted at, until proven they don't have it anymore, you have to treat them as a dangerous, dangerous team. And yeah, I would much rather them 1-2 coming into this game, because I think the likelihood of them, and I know it's not supposed to matter week to week, but the likelihood of them losing to the Bucks as a 3-1 team, I think, is higher, not lower, than if they were 2-2, and they are 2-2. But they're not going to win or lose the game just because of what happened against Carolina. Still, the Bucks offense has a chance here. It's one of those if you are what you say you are type things to go out there and put some numbers up. And speaking of the Bucks offense, we haven't talked much about the Giants game because it's such a short week. We're looking ahead to New Orleans because that's happening right now. But going back to the Giants game, the Buccaneers did better this past week finishing drives. I talked about finishing drives going back to the Bears game, even though they won that very handily. We had talked about how they didn't really finish any drives. And they didn't. They scored their touchdowns on turnovers where they got the ball inside the Bears' 30 in that game. On the times when they drove the length of the field, they stalled and kicked field goals or didn't score at all. Then against Minnesota, they were terrible in general as a team, the defense, not just the offense. Then you come out to the Giants game, and they did a lot better. They had 6 long drives, scored on 5 of them, multiple touchdowns. The big glaring negative spot was, of course, and you know, it's easy to just brush stuff off because you won, but honestly, you know, they were a hair from losing that game, and in which case we'd be ripping them right now. And yet their actual performance for the 3 hours of the game wouldn't have been that different. But your whole perspective changes with a win. First and goal at the one did not score. And I've been talking about the red zone play calling. Everybody's been talking about it, not just me. First and goal at the one after Mike Evans goes up and makes a catch and ends up not being in. It was upon review, they called it a touchdown right away, but then they put the ball at the one, which was fine. I mean, it's first and goal from the one. Who cares? It's an automatic touchdown. Except with the Bucks, everything's got to be complicated down there. And running a toss sweep on the first play, throwing the ball backwards 3 yards, and there was room to hit it, but, you know, the guy misses a block, another guy didn't get his block, whatever. They didn't get there. They actually lost a couple yards. You have Jameis Winston, who's a huge frame guy, and you're on the 1 yard line, first and goal. If you just do a QB sneak 3 straight times, you'll score. Like, there really doesn't have to be anything cute or complicated about this. And yet, that's what they did. Then they ran the bullshit fade. Excuse my language, but if there's nothing, or if there's one thing that gets on my nerves, it's fades on the goal line, which I call dad plays. Dad stands for donate a down. You're just giving them a free down. Hey, just take a free, because they're almost never complete. Oh, we got a tall receiver. We'll just lob it up there. Something will happen. You're actually, your best chance is a pass interference penalty, which those do happen. And that just resets the downs when you're that close. But at least it was only second down when they called the fade. Nothing gets me angrier than when you're in a gotta-have-it situation where, like, you have to get it on this play, whether it's third and goal or fourth and goal, and teams call a fade. It's the laziest, most unimaginative cop-out. Not that you need to be imaginative, because, you know, again, you're on the 1 yard line, just run it in. But to throw the fade, anyway, it didn't work, as you might not be surprised to hear. Now it's third and goal. Then once again, third and goal, we're going to pass again. Because why not pass multiple times when you're inside the 2 yard line? And they try a quick hit pass to Cameron Bray. You know, one of those goal line plays where the quarterback drops back, then just fires the ball in there at Mach 3 to a guy 3 feet away who's surrounded by like 4 members of the defense, who are only there not because they're covering him, but because they were already standing there when the play started, because there's no time to do anything because you're 1 yard away. So yeah, that didn't work. And they ran that play a couple times in the game, and yeah, it didn't work. They ran it on fourth down on the other end, and it didn't work. Because you're supposed to run the ball in short yardage. I'm a firm believer. Like, if you were standing a yard away from me, and I said, hey dude, could you, my car keys, I left them on the table, could you hand them to me? Would you throw them to the person, or would you hand them to him from a yard? You know, 5 yards away, I might do that underhanded toss thing, and the guy catches him. But a yard away, you just hand it to him, right? It's kind of the same thing on the goal line. Like, you're on the 1 yard line. If you're a defensive player, and I've never played in the NFL, or college for that matter, but I've played football, I've played defense, and you're backed up on your own goal line trying to keep the other team out, and they're on the 1 yard line, and they snap the ball, and you see the quarterback drop back, you get excited, like, we got a chance here. I can maybe stop that. If they hand the ball off on the 1 yard line, you know, you're thinking, it's going to be tough, man. I mean, I'm going to throw my body at this guy, try and keep him out, but there's not enough room. They're going to score. I know nobody wants to admit that, but on defense, that's usually, you want them to throw. And the Bucks did. Or if they're going to run, toss sweep backwards, but you're like, hey, I got a chance. So that was an atrocious display of play calling. And it could have cost him the game. Nick Folk also could have cost him the game. Two missed field goals, an extra point, also missed. And I'll tell you what, I said in the preseason after this whole Aguayo thing, they brought Folk and he had missed a couple too. Not as bad as Aguayo, but still. I said Folk ain't the guy either, and he's not. And this will come up again. It's not over. They'll be. I hope it's not against the Patriots, but there's 13 games left. I promise you, it'll happen again. And I'm not going to go on a whole tangent about the kicking game and about Connor Barth and Matt Bryant. And, you know, I'll start having panic attacks talking about Matt Bryant and Connor Barth getting released. Although Barth's in a little bit of trouble in Chicago right now. Apparently they're bringing Aguayo back, even though they cut him in the preseason. They're bringing him back again to compete, quote-unquote. I don't know what they think is going to be different. But Nick Folk and the Bucs were able to eke it out and win the game, luckily. And to his credit, he made the game-winning field goal, although even that was hooking hard left. Watch that field goal again if you get a chance. It's only a 35-yarder or whatever it was, and he hooks the hell out of it. and it sneaks inside the left upright simply because it was so close. If that kick's a 42-yarder or something like that, he hooks that one left too, and they lose. But that'll be an issue that'll come up again. I don't make a ton of predictions on this show, but you watch. That'll be one of them. So with that said, the Bucs do get the win. They're 2-1. Pass rush still not there. Oh, hey, O.J. Howard. Got to give O.J. Howard some credit, too, on his first NFL catch for a touchdown. Although, I heard some people, like, right after he made that play, oh, O.J. Howard, there it is, folks. Eat your heart out. That's why they drafted him over Dalvin Cook. I love O.J. Howard, but that play actually isn't why. Because all of us could have scored. There's other reasons why they drafted O.J. Howard, and you'll see him make those plays throughout the year, but that one play is not why they drafted him. Because I think Joe could have scored. And that was great play design by Dirk Cutter. I mean, again, got the whole defensive flow moving left to right. Nobody saw O.J. Howard. He flies out there on the left side. Everybody else is going right. Hit him. Boom. Touchdown. But again, that's most people in the NFL with a modicum of athletic ability score there. That wasn't one of those, oh, he's special plays. But it was great to see him get in. And Jameis Winston. Let's give it up for him. You know, the biggest compliment I can pay Jameis Winston right now in his third year is that, you know, the Bucs got down. Giants made that go-ahead field goal, not a lot of time left. And did you take for granted that Jameis would get him down there? Because I did. We're already at that point. Now, yeah, I'm not saying, like, I'm not anointing him or anything, but we're already at that point where I was like, oh, yeah, they'll get this done. And he did. Boom, boom, boom. Got him downfield. Cameron Brate, a few other guys. Boom, boom, boom. Field goal range. And we didn't even make a big doubt. That's like the third or fourth thing we talked about from that game. That's the biggest compliment. Not just that he did it, but that we're like, yeah, of course he did it. That's our guy. Like, he's going to, in 10 years, I hope he's on that list where you see those stats at the end of a game every time the other team gets a lead. All the top fourth quarter comebacks all time in the NFL. Jameis Winston has now moved to sixth on the list. You know, he's been in the league 12 years. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Bucks have won 4 Super Bowl. You know, that was one of them there. That's what we're hoping for. Other team hits a field goal. You got 2.5, 3 minutes left. Whatever it is, no problem. You left them too much time. And we just assumed he was going to get that done. And when he did, we said, well, yeah, okay. And we just kind of didn't make a big deal out of it. That's a high compliment. And I didn't want to let it go without mentioning it today because the Bucs offense in general did a hell of a job there. And that's the difference. I mean, you know, drives like that are the difference in this league with so few number of total games, so fine are the lines. 11-5, 10-6, 9-7. That Giants game is one of those games where if you lose it, you sit there in week 17 and you watch somebody that you need to lose doesn't get beat and you miss the playoffs because you're both 10-6 but you lost the tiebreaker or you're both 9-7. That Giants game is exactly why if you lose that game. That is exactly the type of game you lose and then you're in some tiebreaker. No, they got you on conference record like the Lions last year got us on conference record or whatever the hell it was because of losing to the Rams. Giants game would have been like that, but they avoided that this year or at least in that game. So anyway, looking ahead to tonight, as I was saying, you've got, oh, I should mention this too. Ring of Honor tonight, it's being lost in all the fanfare and hoopla with the Patriots and everything else. Malcolm Glazer going into the Ring of Honor. I want to say something about Malcolm Glazer real quick. And again, if you're an old school Bucks fan, you might remember a lot of this stuff. I have conflicting feelings. And Malcolm Glazer is by far from, I should say, the only NFL owner who has gotten a sweetheart deal from a municipality and taken advantage of it. And I know that it's wrong how municipalities pay for stadiums. And I know that it's wrong with the obscene amount of money these guys make. And with the obscene amount of money that just simply owning an NFL team, period, nets you before you win division number one or even win game number one, just being an NFL owner sets you up. And I know all that. But yet, I also think back to 1996. In 1996, or excuse me, I believe it was 1995. My mistake, 1995. The Buccaneers were bad, like always. Not doing well, but they were also under the threat of moving. And that scenario has played out time and time again in many different places, but it happened here. And again, if you were around, you remember this vividly, if you were a person around town back then. But we thought the Bucs were going to leave. They were talking about Baltimore. They were talking about L.A. It's before the Raven. You know, whatever it was. All these different places, Memphis, I can't remember all the cities, but they were talking, and the Bucs were going to leave. And there had been these different guys coming through as candidates. Socrates Babakis, the Greek guy, I remember, was mentioned. A few other people. And I'd never heard of Malcolm Glazer or the Glazers. And right when we were about to leave, the Bucs were about to leave, a news report came down. Hey, Malcolm Glazer's agreed to buy the Buccaneers. He's got the money. He's going to do it. He doesn't want to move the team. And then we have the halfpenny sales tax referendum, again, which I know is wrong. But I also remember having one of those campaign signs, vote yes for the halfpenny sales tax. It had a picture of a penny cut in half. And on one side was like the Abraham Lincoln, the actual penny. On the other side, it said, vote yes, halfpenny sales tax, you know, save our bucks, whatever it said. And I remember holding that sign after school in the couple of weeks leading up to the election. After football practice, too, I had school at Jesuit High School, would go play, I played football, went to practice, and after practice, I would do about a half hour with my sign right on the corner there of Loyola Lane and Himes Avenue, still there, vote yes, because I was so scared the Bucs were going to leave. And I didn't care about tax, I mean, you're 16, you don't pay taxes anyway, you pay sales tax, but you're not, you know, it's not the same as being an adult, but I didn't care anyway. And honestly, I probably wouldn't care now either. The Bucs were going to leave. I wanted to stop that from happening. Malcolm Glazer was going to stop it if we just gave him a stadium. That's all we had to do, and he was going to make it stop. They were going to stay. And then, the week of the vote, and it was on a Tuesday, election day's on a Tuesday, if you remember this, the Bucs played the Packers at home. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, like, this is big. The Bucs need to, win this game. At least that'll help give a little momentum. I'm really worried about the vote here. It's going to be close. Bucs got beat 34-3 that Sunday. I was at the game by the Packers. Just got their asses kicked. People were leaving early. People were disgusted. People were yelling things about the referendum in the stands. And I thought, oh my God, I'm 16 here. Like, again, I'm taking things that are like not going to change my life too greatly one way or the other. And assigning huge amounts of importance to them. Although this one really would have changed. It would have changed all of our lives. We wouldn't be sitting right now doing a podcast, that's for sure. But I'm thinking, oh my God, the Bucs losing 34-3. This vote's not going to pass. And then the Tuesday of the election came, and I did like the entire day. I think I used my free periods during the day and my lunch to go out on Himes and hold the sign up. I wanted the Bucs to stay. It's all I cared about. You know, people say it's highway robbery when these politicians take public money or threaten to leave and take their team and move to another city. And they're right. But the funny thing about robbery is it is robbery. But what do you do when someone robs you and points a gun at you? Do you say, hey, this isn't a fair deal, dude. I'm not going to do this. No, you acknowledge that it's wrong and that it's robbery, but you still give them the money because you don't want to get shot. And that's the whole point. We didn't lose the Bucs, right? I mean, like, we got robbed with the community investment tax and all that stuff, but we still, the Bucs are still here. Like, we could have made a point. I mean, it really is, like, people say robbery. Well, think about robbery. I don't think people think about robbery when they call these things highway robbery. Yes, it's highway robbery. What happens in a robbery? You value your life more than a few Bucs. I valued the Bucs more than a few Bucs, if that makes any sense. And I wasn't a member of the voting public back then. I was only 16. But I would do it again today. And I wouldn't just vote yes, but I'd carry that sign today. Because to me, keeping the Bucs was a very important thing. They played a big role in my life back then. They still do. And every time I walk into that stadium, and every time I think about Malcolm Glazer, who again, I've had plenty to say about the Glazers. Malcolm's one thing. The Suns, I got a lot to say about the Suns, and I don't know how to get into it here. But just look at the uniforms the Bucks are wearing. The Glazers thought it was a good idea. Like, they actually thought it was a good idea to change to the that somebody thinks that the Bucks should wear the uniforms they're wearing, that the Glazers thought that was a good thing and said, yes, let's go with these, shows the type of judgment those guys have, in my opinion. That's just one example. But that's the Suns. Old man Malcolm, every time I walk into that stadium, I think back to holding that sign on Himes Avenue, vote yes on the halfpenny sales tax. I think back to thinking about, I would have been in tears. I'd be in tears now, to be honest with you. If the Bucks ever left, that would break my heart in two. And so, yeah, it was a bad deal. Not just paying for the stadium, but paying for the stadium. And then, do you know, like, USF concession money, all that stuff. Like, all that goes to the Glazers. It's as if they own the stadium, even though they didn't pay for it. It'd be one thing just to build the stadium with community money, but then the community gets the revenue and all that stuff. You know, that'd be one thing, but it's as if they own it, even though we built it. And it's wrong, and I know that. I know that. But I wouldn't change a thing, because the Buccaneers were going to leave, and they weren't going to come back, and we wouldn't be sitting here getting ready for a Bucks-Patriots game on Thursday Night Football. The Bucks wouldn't have won the Super Bowl in 2002. There wouldn't have been a Bucks. The Bucks, or Tampa, wouldn't be hosting the Super Bowl coming up and wouldn't have hosted two other ones since Raymond James Stadium was built. All those things never would have happened. And, you know, some of you might say, oh, well, fine, it's not worth it. I think it is worth it. And even though some things sometimes are wrong, you do them anyway because they're better than the alternative. And Malcolm Glazer and his big, 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 big bags of money are the reason why. So, again, I don't want to get all, like, slobbery over a sports owner because those guys are there to make money and they don't care if they don't make money about anything else. And if they do make money, they also don't care about anything else. And I'm not saying the Glazers don't care about the Bucks, but I'm saying, like, all the rah-rah stuff, all the schmaltzy stuff, all the stuff I'm saying right now, that doesn't matter to them or any of the owners. I get that, but I don't care because the reason the Bucks are here, a big reason of many reasons, is Malcolm Glazer. He'll be honored in the Ring of Honor tomorrow night or tonight, depending on when you're listening to this. And hats off to him. So that, with that said, Bucks Patriots, let's have some fun. Remember what I told you earlier in the podcast. Make this an excuse to get together with old friends or new friends or any friends. If you're going home, not doing anything tonight, call up a friend. Hey, come over for the game. What are you doing? Let's get a pizza. Let's get some beer. Whatever. Or go out to a sports bar. Make it an excuse to make an event out of it. If you're going to the game, have a blast. It's a school night. Let the kids stay up a little bit late and just watch the first couple series. Again, these things, they're more common now. I know every team gets to play on Thursday Night Football. I know it's not like the old days where the Bucks would go 7-8 years without ever having a night game and what a big deal it was when they finally did. It's not like that now, but it's still a big deal. The Monday night game later in the season against Atlanta will be the same way. But these are special. They don't come around very often, and you tend to remember these for longer than just a routine run-of-the-mill Sunday 1 o'clock game. So make it memorable. Have some fun with it. Watch it with people you love. Watch it with people you care about. Make it an excuse to get together with people that maybe you otherwise haven't seen in a while and have fun. As far as the game goes, I fully believe, and I mean I fully believe, the Buccaneers can win this football game. And even though it's still the Patriots, and the Patriots, by the way, I don't know what the line has been doing, but I got it at 5.5. And again, me betting with the Bucs is, you know, always bad news, but the Bucs getting 5.5 at home against a team that on paper they're actually better than right now. And again, the Patriots factor is the only reason. If this was any other team with the same exact, and I know it's numbers are numbers, but if this was any other team with different uniforms and you put those numbers out there, you'd say, these guys suck. Well, these guys aren't that good. They can't stop anybody. They barely beat Houston for one of their wins. They're getting lit up by every offense that rolls through there. That's what you'd say. But again, still Brady, still Belichick, and Brady and Belichick for a long time have been making people like me sound stupid a day later when they express any kind of bravado about being able to beat them. And I'm not the one playing in the game. It's easy for me to sit here and say, oh yeah, the Bucs are going to beat the Patriots. I can say that all I want. I'm not suiting up in this game. But it's absolutely a game the Bucs can win. And if they don't win at 2-2, it wouldn't be the end of the world. That's another reason why the Giants game was so big, and we talked about that last week. Because I would not have wanted to be 1-2 with this one coming up. But being 2-1, you got a little... I'm not saying, hey, 3-1 is way better than 2-2, but not the end of the world. All certainly better than 1-3. Either way, we'll be back next week with another edition of the Free Stretch. I want to thank Joe Bucks Fan for hosting this podcast as always. I want to thank all of you. Email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. You can always find me and follow me and talk to me that way. Thanks to the Dunedin Pirates, my semi-pro football team. If you want to play football, and I'm talking about real football, go to DunedinPirates.com. You can be my teammate. 10-game schedule in the spring. We play all over the state. 5 home, 5 road, and playoffs. It's awesome. Practice once a week. Check them out. I'm Bobby Fenton. That is the Week 5 edition of the Free Stretch Podcast. I'll talk to you guys next week. And let's go Bucks. Beat the Pats.